Welcome to the Looks of Dynasty Daily Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan McNamara, and we are diving into the Seattle Seahawks almost halfway through our journey around the league. We are 15th out of 16 teams, one left, San Francisco, on our journey around the NFC, and then we'll flip-flop to the AFC. Got a couple of guests as well along the way there. So Seattle, going through some transition. They lose Russell Wilson in the big trade, get a plethora of first-round picks, and are going to try and rebuild. It's a curious decision with a quarterback in his prime, also with a coach who's past his prime. You would think this would be the winning window, but they've kind of not distinguished themselves in recent years, despite Russell Wilson being pretty good. Right? They've made some mistakes, and people go through valleys and ups and downs in their contending window, and they make mistakes drafting and through other transactions as well. I think they've had a notably bad arc over the past couple of years, specifically trading multiple firsts for a safety, for example. Like, that's not a great deal there in the Jamal Adams trade, for example. So there's some stuff there that you look at and it's head scratching, but teams go through these cycles, and I will say this for Seattle. If instead of constantly trying to be mediocre, they're trying to get better, and maybe that includes being worse for a bit, right? I don't necessarily hate that. I'd rather do this than sort of languish in mediocrity like the Panthers have done, for example. So if you don't think Russell Wilson, or if you're not going to pay Russell Wilson, if you don't think he's going to be the quarterback of your next team, you might as well get on with it. And that's kind of what they did. So I don't necessarily hate that for them, but I just think it wouldn't be the angle I would do, but I understand why it could be an angle. And there's obviously information that they don't know, or that we don't know that they do know. So that is the big move. They lost Dwayne Brown as well. Gerald Everett's a free agent. Seattle returned Noah Fant and Drew Lock as notable returns in the Russell Wilson trade. And we'll talk about both those guys. I actually think as I was diving into this, I was kind of bearish on the return they got. I don't think like Noah Fant or Drew Lock really moves the needle in terms of it being massively better players. But I will say I've come out of this appreciating them a little bit more than I did going in. So Geno Smith is going to compete with Drew Lock, presumably, in the quarterback battle. The team also drafted two tackles in the first 2 days of the NFL draft, along with Kenneth Walker on day two there. They re-signed Rashad Penny to a one-year deal, and that leaves really Chris Carson's status up in the air as he works his way back from his spinal-related surgery there, back neck area. So that's where kind of they are. I think the split between Walker and Penny will be an interesting one of note. The team last year was pretty dismal for fantasy production, 31st in plays per game, 30th in terms of dropbacks per game, 20th in designed run attempts per game, and 24th in percentage of plays that were designed pass. So low amount of plays, and as a result of that, there was the low number of plays combined with the run heaviness of their plays really limited some of the passing game stuff. So 30th in terms of dropbacks per game, really limiting there for the team. They were 6th in pace, which is interesting, and no team threw a higher percentage of its passes deep. So if you're looking for places where, hey, this could count, that's a spot where there is some value in their passing attempts and the fact that they are further down the field. The team ranked 5th in yards per attempt and 5th in touchdown rate. All of this comes with the caveat that Russell Wilson was a quarterback, and this quarterback, whoever it is, will be a downgrade from that. Geno Smith, Drew Lock, whoever, right? They were in on the Baker saga and are obviously not now, considering he's in Carolina. So we presume it's either Baker or we presume it's either Geno or Locke. One thing that will be interesting is Kenneth Walker in the passing game. Seattle ranked 15th in running back routes per dropback. They ranked 28th in running back targets per dropback. Is that a feature of Russell Wilson? Is that a feature of the offense generally? Is it a feature of the fact that Carson and Penny and the other running backs who were playing there just really didn't optimize what they wanted to do in the passing game? It probably could be a combination of all of those. Kenneth Walker is not a player who comes with a high opinion in the passing game. So that would be one thing that would give me a little bit of pause with Walker about maybe the design and structure, although some of that could be Wilson-related. Again, remember, they throw a lot of deep passes as a proportion of their passes. Those are almost never two running backs. So for what that's worth, again, that's maybe 20 to 25% of an offense, like if you're really aggressive. So there's still a lot there, but it's notable that they were well below their share of routes and the targets to running backs. Some expectation stats here. So 32nd in running back per game expected points, not good. That's not a good situation. So how do you fix that? You obviously draft a running back. Never usually the solution to that problem. 33 points per game for the wide receivers that ranked 19th, and tight ends, they were 9.9 expected points at 24th. I would say this in defense of their tight end situation. They didn't have anyone the quality of Noah Fant last year. So that could be a potential place where you pivot and maybe get some more work towards emphasize Noah Fant. And listen, they went out and made Noah Fant a portion of that trade. Right? You would think that logical, dangerous assumption of rational coaching, but they made a point to get him included in that deal. I think watching that could be watching his potential growth role would be is a spot to pay attention to this offseason. Some more Locke versus Geno Smith stuff. So Geno Smith's career yards per attempt is 6.9. And that's in a period of the time where about 80% of those attempts were in 2013, 2014. Yards per attempt were much lower. All right, so that comes versus Drew Locke, who is at 6.7 yards per attempt in an era that's much friendlier. So you already say there's some gapping stuff, right? One of the best parts about thinking differently and thinking through an analytics lens and thinking maybe more aggressively or using data is what more can we learn, right? And so Locke actually edged out Geno Smith in career big-time throw rate, for example. 5.3% for Locke and 4.4% for Geno Smith. Smith was also worse in turnover-worthy plays than Locke. Locke had a 4.2 turnover-worthy play rate, so again, was positive in that. Better big-time throws to turnover-worthy plays. Geno Smith on his career, 5% turnover-worthy play rate. That is worse than his big-time throw rate. Again, that's a bad negative split. That's a spot where you could say, hey, listen, is Locke actually have something to offer a little bit more than a little bit more than we might have given him credit for? I remember, and as I was doing this, like we've learned a lot about quarterbacks in the past year. As I was doing this, I was thinking about last year, I was actually advocating for Denver to start Drew Locke. And I just, dug back through some research and stuff. And one of the things that I was surprised about was they did turn over the keys to Bridgewater last year when Drew Locke was coming off the big-time throw rate that was seventh best in the league in 2020. Locke should have had a fighting chance, and I don't think really did if you're bringing in Teddy Bridgewater. I think Locke should have a fighting chance to win this battle in Seattle. I'm not sure he's going to win it, and I'm not sure he's a long-term franchise quarterback. And listen, the fact that Denver benched him, the fact that Denver went out and got Bridgewater, that might tell us all we need to know, right? There's a lot to this. Like, I have this theory that body tracking data or I don't know if it's necessarily your Whoop. Like, I wear a Whoop, but that's not necessarily geo tracking. But I guess, like, if you could or track your movements on your cell phone and stuff like that, I have this theory that if we had that data, it would substantially substantially improve our ability to predict player performance, because you know who the guys are that are going out. You know who the guys are who are staying in and studying. You know who the guys are that are taking rest, recovery, and stuff really seriously. We know how important that is. We know the guys that aren't, right? We know the guys that are out partying and not, and all those things, right? We don't know that. Maybe they do. And maybe that's why they moved on from Drew Lock, right? That could be it. I have no information to say that it's it, but you just have to keep in mind when a team does something that seems to the outside to be suboptimal, always consider the fact that we know 2% of the information versus the 98% of the time of what they see of the player. That's the big thing I think with Lock, and that's the thing that gives me a bit of pause. When you lose out to Teddy Bridgewater, they spend money on Teddy Bridgewater to bring him in and all that. Like, it just gives me a lot of pause about where we're at. So I would say this. I think Lock is – they're both cheap enough, right? I have enough Geno Smith. I have – maybe I have a rogue share or two of Lock. And listen, you could say – you could put together a worse scenario for a quarterback, right? You bring in a quarterback who's developing. We don't usually see these long development arcs out of day two guys, right? So that's kind of a bet against Lock. Like, as a prior, you don't see this a ton. But if he does get an opportunity, Metcalf, Lockett, Fant, I mean, there's worse scenarios for him to go to. So I think that's an interesting one. They're both in the 30s. We'll get there in a second in terms of dynasty costs. But I was actually surprised with some of the stats for Lock. I think his advanced numbers are probably better than his actual, like, box score numbers. And those things are interesting. And maybe even more so, like, I don't think Lock's going to be a big-time quarterback, but he's willing to throw it down the field. Like, he was the second highest in his production in his year of 2020 when he got an extended opportunity to start. He threw the second highest percentage of his throws deep at 16%. That's good. Like, that is a good scenario for guys like Metcalf, for guys like Lockett, who can thrive on that type of stuff, be willing to exploit it. Again, he wasn't great at it, but on the flip side, he didn't have DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett, who are really good at it. So, I'm open-minded to the idea of Drew Lock, more so now than I maybe was in, like, after the Russell Wilson trade. But I do think it's probably more so beneficial to Metcalf and Lockett than it necessarily is, like, he's going to be a long-term starter, or you're going to trust him in your lineup or anything like that. I think he can probably bring stuff out of Metcalf and Lockett, and maybe Fant to a degree as well, more so than I necessarily appreciated. And we'll get to that in a second too, as well, with some target projections I think are valuable. Fant is one that I'd watch for. I've sort of bagged on Fant a little bit. I don't necessarily like I'm going to say two contradictory things for a second. On one hand, I don't like floor plays at tight end. On the other hand, or when I have to pay up for them. Okay, when I have to pay up for floor plays at tight end, it's not great. Okay, it's not really what you want to do. On the other hand, when you have to pay cheap, when they're cheap, I'm fine with a floor play type profile at tight end. Fant's a bit stuck in the middle, right? Because Fant, like, when you look at all the stuff here, yards per route run on his career, 1.56, that's 85th percentile. Again, that's good. I wouldn't consider that elite. That's good. Fant targeted on 19.3% of his routes. Again, 85th percentile. That's very good. I wouldn't consider it elite, but it's very good. Produces 0.34 fantasy points per route run. It's 81st percentile. Again, good. Not great, but good. Those are good things. The problem is when you factor that in right now, how the redraft market is treating him. And again, we like the redraft market as an efficient market in terms of predicting and thinking about ranking players and the like. Like, it's helpful looking at the redraft market because there's incentivized information, right? It is an incentivized market, a free market that sort of gives us an idea of kind of how players should rank. And there's lots of information in it. Well, that's best in redraft because you're most considering this year. He's tight end 20. And in dynasty drafts, he's tight end 11. So we go back to our thing. We don't mind floor plays if they're cheap, but we don't like them when they're expensive. And tight end 11 for Fant feels kind of expensive. I've had zero success trading him at that cost. I'd be much more apt to try and draft him in like the teens as maybe necessarily try and sell at his cost right now. It's a really hard market to sell into. I've had virtually zero luck. But that's the thing that I would think about. You know, can you pivot Fant to Goddard? Right? I think that's really hard to do right now. It's hard to pivot him down. It's hard to pivot him up. It's really hard to pivot off Noah Fant. So I have a handful of shares, and I've had zero success doing it. I like the profile, and maybe we're underselling him. Maybe the redraft market's underselling him a bit. But again, I don't see how he massively outproduces tight end 11 and isn't cheaper than he is right now. So I think he's one that, and again, if you fast forward 12 months, if this is a team that has a rookie quarterback, if this is a team that has moved on from a guy like Tyler Lockett, and there's a scenario where Fant's the last man standing of this offense, right? Where they don't extend Metcalf. I think they will, but there's a scenario where they don't, and they move on from Lockett, and Fant's standing there as your tight end one, as your wide receiver, as your leading pass catcher. That is an impossible outcome in 2023. So how valuable is that in a run heavy offense without a good quarterback? Like, questionable, but like that is a possibility, and I could see that potentially happening, or even be the second pass catcher, right, in the hierarchy. So I think those things are possible. So let's look here. I do want to also hit for a second the target projections for DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett. So when you look at, I looked at three different sources. I looked at Mike Clay. He had Metcalf 125, Lockett 119. PFF had Metcalf 122, Lockett 111. CBS, a bigger split, 135 for Metcalf, 109 for Lockett. I think when you look at the Dynasty RDP versus the redraft cost, there's one thing specifically that stands out. DK Metcalf, wide receiver 11 in Dynasty, wide receiver 24 in redraft. I can't justify that. I just can't do that. At his cost, that's just too much. I would pivot off of Metcalf, either pivot up or pivot down or pivot off the position would be my recommendation based on those numbers. And what I think is like 125 targets is a median projection. It's good, but it's not wide receiver 11 good. And I think you have a really hard time producing to that level. So I would be pivoting off of that at present. Lockett, by way of reference, is 53 in terms of his RDP and wide receiver 47 in redraft. And if he's going to get in the 110 target range, I don't dislike that, right? I think that's a decent shot there for him. And again, you're filling in, right? You're trying to count to 450, 500 out of a top four wide receivers that you're trying to get in your lineup this year, right? I think he's a person that could be additive to that. Walker and Penny are 33 and 32 respectively in redrafts, so really close. Walker, of course, running back 15 in RDP, Penny running back 40, and then both guys, Locke and Smith, both at 38 in Dynasty RDP, 36 for Locke in redraft, 39 for Smith in redraft, so the market pretty close on them with a slight lean towards Lockett. With a slight lean towards Locke. So overall, I think like I'm largely avoiding this team would be what I would say. I think if you're going to take a shot, you take a shot on, you know, Fant. And maybe it's not even necessarily Fant now. Maybe it's Fant in week four, right? I think that could be the potential time to take a look at Fant if there's a disappointing start to this season. But if they look like they're off the rails, like realize you're investing in a player who's very good at the position. He might not never be elite, but you don't want to pay. You don't want to pay like very good costs for a very good tight end. Like you want to pay a good player cost for a very good tight end. That would sort of be my recommendation. And that's for me, wide receiver, a tight end 11 is like very good cost for a tight end. And I just wouldn't pay that, especially with the negative split between RDP and redraft. But if that opens up and it really sort of the bottom falls out in season, I could really be on that much more so. So hope that helps in terms of some strategic thinking here over the longer term for an offense that I don't necessarily love, but we'll see. Maybe they have the ability to surprise us. But until next time, that'll do it for this Seattle preview show. And until next time, continue embracing the variance. We'll talk again very soon.